This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, sitting in for Terry Gross. Mike White is an actor and writer whose best-known work is the Jack Black film School of Rock, which he wrote and appeared in as Ned Schneebly, Jack's timid roommate. White's other screenplays include The Good Girl, Nacho Libre, Orange County, and Chuck and Buck, which he also starred in. White's also written episodes of several TV series, including Freaks and Geeks and Dawson's Creek. Now Mike White has made his directorial debut with Year of the Dog, a new film he wrote starring Molly Shannon, Peter Sarsgaard, John C. Reilly, and Laura Dern. Shannon plays Peggy, a single office worker whose closest relationship is with her pet beagle, Pencil. That is, until he dies unexpectedly. She's crushed by the loss of her companion, so a neighbor she's barely spoken to before, played by John C. Reilly, asks her out to dinner. Here they are at a restaurant.
So you were saying you had a dog who died when you were young?
Tessie, I love that dog. I had her since she was a puppy. We did everything together. She was my right-hand bitch. Sorry, I mean, in the dog way of being a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she died way too young. She was only 6.
Oh.
Yeah.
How did she die?
I shot her in Wyoming. You want some more wine?
Wait, what do you mean?
It was an accident. A hunting accident.
Oh.
I still feel terrible.
What were you hunting?
Hunting moose. Mooses. They got a lot of moose up there. Don't worry about it. You ever been hunting?
No.
Can be a rush. But, you know, accidents do happen. And, a gun is a very powerful weapon. I learned that the hard way. That's why I never keep guns in my house.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Just knives.
Well, Mike White, welcome back to Fresh Air. Molly Shannon is at the center of this story. Is it true that you wrote this script with her in mind?
Yeah. I had the inspiration for the movie was I was doing this TV series for Fox. It was a half-hour sitcom with Molly and Jason Schwartzman called Cracking Up that was like a short-lived disaster. And it was one of those things where like just constant fighting with the network, never a moment of peace, just one of those really bad professional experiences. And I was just sort of overstressed and underslept, and over the Christmas breaks where sometimes you try to catch up on scripts, I had this stray cat who lived behind my house who sort of unexpectedly died on me one day. It was like on Christmas Day, actually. And I didn't even know I was that attached to the cat, but I was so sort of emotionally kind of unhinged by this cat dying. I ended up writing the like most depressing half hour of that show. And the network hated more than the other stuff I had already been doing, and ended up getting even more behind. And it was just like basically the show shut down. And I really think if that cat hadn't died, it wouldn't have had such a sort of profoundly depressing end. And when the dust settled on it, I looked back and I thought, well, that's kind of an interesting life experience. And you know, the thing was, one thing I had gotten was I just had such a great time with Molly. I just felt like it's like, you know, when you make a movie or you have a TV series, you feel like you're throwing a party and you invite all these people to your party and you tell them it's going to be fun. And then it turns out not to be fun and it just goes on forever. And it was just one of those things where I was like, I'd like to throw a party for Molly where it actually was fun and we had a good time and it turned out good.
Right. So the story kind of revolves around people, adults who are in some ways obsessed with their pets. Was there something about that idea that connected to Molly Shannon?
Well, not so much the pets, but I do think that like there's just sort of an innocence about Peggy and a sweetness. And the thing about Molly is she's kind of preternaturally like positive. There's just something like she just has like she's just such a kind, like she's so giving as just in communication and in life. And I just thought, you know, people think of her as like the girl who's like sniffing her armpits and falling over bleacher chairs from Saturday Night Live. And
right.
I just, you know, it's like there's such a sweet warmth to Molly. And I just wanted to create a character that she got to show some of those colors too.
Well, I think she is terrific in the role. And I thought maybe we would share with the audience a moment from the film. This is where this is after she's had the experience of a pet dying, and she ends up going out on for dinner with her next-door neighbor, who's a regular guy played by John C. Reilly. And in this scene, they've just come back from dinner, and they're sitting in the front seat of John C. Reilly's truck, and this conversation ensues.
Thank you. I had a nice time.
So you ever been married?
No. I mean, I had boyfriends, but I never, you know, I guess I never, that never happened. But, you know, I think some people just aren't as, you know, I don't even know what I'm saying. Just, you know, whatever, you know, what are you going to do? And the whole dating thing is just kind of yuck. No, thank you. So, yeah, so I don't know. That's basically how I feel. Just, I don't know. It's like that.
And that's Molly Shannon and John C. Reilly in the film Year of the Dog, written and directed by my guest, Mike White. You know, I love the way she delivers that. And I wondered how much of that is written and how much of that is improvised.
Well, it feels like I'm patting myself on the back. But, it was definitely, it was weird that Molly actually memorized all of those ramblings that were on the page. It was like oddly exactly, I mean, she did it her way. But it was not improvised. I tried to do my best version of a stuttering, muttering fool.
You've, of course, written a lot of movies and you've acted in movies. This is the first time you've directed one. And I'm wondering what the experience was like. Whereas in the past, you've come up with the words, but then it's someone else's interpretation that gets on screen. What was it like to run it, to be in control?
Well, it's, you know, the truth is that I've had really great experiences with directors and have been able to be, since I've acted in some of the movies I've been in, you know, to be able to be a part of the production. And I've never really had the experience where I mean, at least in the features that I've done where I go... Oh gosh, they blew it in the interpretation. I've always felt like they were pretty uncharacteristically close to the script. You know, for screenwriters, usually they get frustrated by that. But it definitely, after a while, you become a backseat driver anyway. You know, you just become more and more of a, like, you know, you a hand wringer, and it you start to irritate yourself
as a writer.
It's just as like the person on the set who's like, you know, going, well, you know, like, you know, trying to put your two cents in and knowing when the right time is. And, you know, like, you sort of end up feeling like you're passive aggressively manipulating everybody to try to do it the way you want them to. And that ends up becoming more stressful than actually directing. Being able to just go over and say, well, why don't you try it this way or whatever, and not feeling like, you know, is this my role or am I stepping on somebody's toes? It was actually made it a lot less stressful for whatever reason.
If you're just joining me, my guest is actor, writer, and now director Mike White. His new film is Year of the Dog. You've covered a lot of different subject areas when I look at the body of work that you've written. But it seems that a lot of your central characters are sort of on the fringe of worlds they inhabit, sort of restless, dissatisfied people. Were you like that growing up?
Well, I definitely relate to somebody who feels like their interests or their persona or whatever is somehow outside of the mainstream, and that the sort of conventional world is something that feel slightly alienated from. And so I tend to like to write characters that kind of, you know, whether by their passion or their goals or who they are, sort of are subverting the status quo or the world they're in.
Right. Now, you went to Wesleyan University and were lucky enough to get writing work in Hollywood pretty quickly, did a lot of television work. And then in 2000, you wrote and started in Chuck and Buck, which is this film where you play Buck, this guy in his 20s who's sort of has the social development of a 12-year-old and who's trying to reconnect with his childhood friend Chuck. And here is a scene where Buck, who's the kind of socially studded guy, visits Chuck in his office. I think we have a clip.
After you left, I didn't really get into school at all. You know, I didn't like the other kids so much. All the homework and sports just wasn't fun. It's weird you have this office. What are you doing here?
Sign bands and produce and negotiate contracts. It's not all that interesting.
That's funny. That's really funny. Because you remember we used to play games like we were businessmen. Remember we bought all those office supplies? And now you're like really doing it. Is it real now or is it still like a game?
It's pretty real.
And that's my guest, Mike White, along with Chris Weitz in the film Chuck and Buck, which Mike White wrote and starred in. You know, in this film, Chuck, the kind of more socially stunted of the two, is sexually attracted to his old friend, but kind of sees sex as an adolescent does, and he sort of becomes a stalker. What's interesting about this film, I know that you didn't direct it and didn't do the casting, but you ended up playing the lead, and you inhabit this role so completely convincingly that I wonder if it sort of followed you and people assume it's in some way autobiographical.
Well, I did get a lot of that when the movie first came out. And, certainly the first – it was a weird thing to, have your first movie and be in it and be sort of recognized to be that character and have all of those sort of, assumptions or questions that come with that. But, in a way, it was a really creatively liberating because when you have once you kind of like jump out of the airplane and have that kind of real sense of just like, gosh, all these people either think I'm crazy or I'm this character. It just sort of like you realize you can't control that. And you'll never win the popularity contest in a sense. So you can kind of just give up that goal and just kind of pursue the stuff that makes it, that's meaningful to you.
Did it open doors for you, though, this film?
Yeah, weirdly. I mean, it was like one of those movies that like when I wrote it, and said I was going to make it. I mean, people would read the script and say, not only do I not want to like, give you the money to make this, but I think you really shouldn't make this. Don't make this movie kind of thing. So it was interesting that when once it was made and we put it out there that, it was a movie that, kind of seems to have stuck around. And certainly it did open doors for me in terms of, people, screenwriters suffer from anonymity, I think, in a sense. And whether even if like, people think maybe I'm a crazy stalker, at least they recognize me and can identify me with the work that I do. And that has certainly been helpful in some sense in this
right.
business.
A lot of people know your film School of Rock, which you also wrote and which stars Jack Black as this out-of-work rock musician who, desperate for money, gets a gig as a substitute teacher in a private school and then kind of uses the kids to create a rock band which he can star in. Where did that idea come from?
Well, I was living next door to Jack for a few years and became friendly with him, and sometimes he would give me scripts that people, that had been offered to him. And I wasn't really in the big sort of comedy rewrite world or whatever, but I kept reading these scripts and I was like, I could write something for him that would be more appealing potentially than these scripts that he's giving to me. And there's something so winning about Jack. And up to that point, it felt like he was really just getting the parts of like the like drunk frat guy or, who's falling through windows or whatever. I just thought it would be fun to kind of make a movie with him with kids and try to like open up his audience base and try to do something that's sweeter.
Well, it really worked. Let's hear a clip from School of Rock. This is Jack Black, where he has his students who he's making molding into a rock band, and here's where he's explaining to them the nature of rock and roll.
You guys have been doing real good in here, and if I was going to give you a grade, I would give you an A. But that's the problem. Rock ain't about doing things perfect. Who can tell me what it's really about? Frankie.
Scoring chicks?
No. See? No. Eleni?
Getting wasted.
No. Come on. No. Leonard.
Sticking it to the man?
Yes. But you can't just say it, man. You gotta feel it in your blood and guts. If you wanna rock, you gotta break the rules. You gotta get mad at the man. And right now I'm the man. That's right, I'm the man. And who's got the guts to tell me off? Huh? Who's gonna tell me off?
Shut the hell up, Schneebly.
That's it, Freddy. That's it. Who can top him?
Get out of here, stupid ass.
Yes, Alicia.
You're a joke. You're the worst teacher I've ever had.
Summer, that is great. I like the delivery because I felt your anger.
Thank you.
You're a fat loser and you have body odor.
All right. All right.
And that is Jack Black from School of Rock, written by my guest, Mike White. It's just so much fun to watch Jack Black in this role. It's sort of hard to imagine anybody else having done it. Were there certain mannerisms or certain styles he had that you wanted to get into this character?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I, again, it was just like with Molly, it was like I really wrote something specifically for him. And, you know, I knew he was going to bring a lot of his own stuff to it. But I tried to write something that was as much in his voice and, you know, with his mannerisms as I had observed in my time living next door to him. He just, you know, the thing about Jack, and I find that's true about Molly and certain people that are, you know, at the highest level of, you know, comedy, that they just are funny. Like, I don't think Jack has ever left a message on my machine that wasn't humorous. And I don't think it's not necessarily that he's always on or trying really hard. There's just something sort of funny about the way he, you know, words come out of his mouth. And so that makes it easier to write comedy when you have somebody who can just kind of sell it.
Now, you also had kids in this, which were a critical element of it working. How did you picture the kids in School of Rock? I mean, it's not quite Fame, not quite Bad News Bears.
Well, I felt like it's like you needed, with Jack, you need somebody who's like crashing the sort of the party. So in a sense that I felt like it was important to like make the kids in a more sort of, you know, uptight, you know, very academic and competitive school, because it felt like that then he would really be the fish out of water in that world. So, and I had gone to a school growing up that was pretty rigorous and similar to the school in School of Rock. But Rick Linklater really deserves the credit for finding these kids, especially the ones that were in the band. It was really important to him to find kids that really played that music and could perform, so it didn't feel like some cheesy, you know, like some cheesy TV show where everybody was lip syncing in the big finale.
Right. You know, a colleague of mine at the Philadelphia Daily News said that movie was like a life altering experience for his kids who were playing music and really got into classic rock after that. I mean, was there any kind of mission here? I'm wondering if did you have any particular relationship to rock and roll that informed this idea?
I mean, for me, it's more the creative impulse. I mean, I went to a school that was very sort of like focused on the mathematics and the sciences and, you know, very preparatory. And I was this sort of creative person and felt like like that part of my education wasn't as much focused on, and had sort of wished it had been. And so whether it was rock music or, you know, writing or just anything that was more creative, it was what I was kind of trying to do, was talk about, you know. And, you know, the thing is, when I was a kid and watched movies, I would come home and sort of reenact the movie, especially if something that really caught my inspiration. And so there was a part of me that was writing to that kid in me, which was sort of saying, you know, go out and do it, you know, like just a sort of call to follow your creative impulses.
Now, I know you also grew up in a conservative Christian home. I mean, did that make it harder to explore creative stuff?
I mean, not so much. I mean, my dad was he was a minister, and he came from a really conservative Christian background, but he was a filmmaker and a writer. So it wasn't so much that, you know, my parents were squashing that creative impulse at all, but, yeah, so not so much. It does actually affect the fact that like I don't have a very long sort of rock musical education, because, you know, we had sort of more, you know, gospel and Christian music in our house, and so I think people think, well, since I've written School of Rock, that I'm some sort of rock aficionado, and there's actually huge gaps in my rock education.
Well, after School of Rock, you did another film with Jack Black that was a vehicle for his energy called Nacho Libre, where he plays Ignacio, who is a cook in a, I guess, a monastery that's raising orphans in Mexico, and then decides to get into, become a secret, adopt a secret life as a wrestler in the Lucha Libre contest to make, so he can afford fresh ingredients for his orphans' meals. Where did this idea come from?
Well, I was working on this script with Jared and Jerusha Hess. Jared directed Napoleon Dynamite, and they wrote that movie together. And the three of us got together, and you know, Jared was really excited about writing a movie about Mexican luchadors for Jack. So we, you know, I don't know, we spent a few weeks in Salt Lake City and kind of came up with this story. It was one of the best sort of, or the most fun collaborative experiences I've had.
Let's hear a clip. Here, Jack Black as Ignacio has come upon a bunch of the orphans that he cares for wrestling. And Sister Encarnacion tells them they can't do this and wants Ignacio to explain to the kids why wrestling is bad.
Orphans, listen to me. Listen to Ignacio. I know it is fun to wrestle. A nice pile drive to the face, or a punch to the face. But you cannot do it, because it is in the Bible not to wrestle your neighbor.
So you've never wrestled?
Me? No, come on, don't be crazy. Listen, I know the wrestlers get all the fancy ladies, and the clothes, and the free creams and lotions. But my life is good. Really good. I get to wake up every morning at 5 a.m. and make some soup. It's the best. I love it. I get to lay in a bed by myself all of my life. It's fantastic.
And that is Jack Black as Ignacio in the film Nacho Libre, written by our guest Mike White. You know, this seems like an idea that really could miss. And you know, you have like Jack Black here. He's, you know, has this accent. And was there ever any concern that you'd be seen as sort of showing the cultural sensitivity of the Frito Bandito?
Well, I mean, because the idea came to me through Jared, I was concerned, and certainly Jack was concerned about all of that. But you know, Jared is such a real deep fan of this world, and you know, he's a Mormon and spent years in South America on his mission, and speaks fluent Spanish, and is just a real sort of like, you know, diehard fan of the luchador culture and South American cultures, and it just felt like it was coming from such a pure place. You know, even though his stuff is sort of twisted and like he does have a sort of absurd take on humanity, it didn't feel like it was sort of playing on stereotypes. It felt like there was just something more interesting about where the humor was coming from.
Well, you know, you're now a Hollywood triple threat, a successful writer, actor, and now director. Does acting more appeal to you?
You know, I just did a movie with Diane Keaton where I acted, and that was super fun because she's a friend of mine, and she's, you know, she's like a, I don't know, a hero of mine, and that was fun. But, you know, it takes so much time to get the things that you are writing, you know, manifested, that it's hard for me to warrant walking away from that for a few weeks to go act in something. You know, I like acting, but if I was told I never could do it again, I could survive. But I don't think that's true about writing. I feel like if I'll always be writing, and that's kind of how I come to this business, I guess.
Well, Mike White, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Oh, cool. Thanks for having me.
Actor, writer, and director Mike White. He's written and directed a new film starring Molly Shannon. It's called Year of the Dog. Here's Jack Black from the soundtrack of Nacho Libre.
Bien.
I am the singing at the party. I am singing, it's my turn to sing at the party. Everyone is dancing, happy party. But Ramses is not dancing, he does not dance at the parties. And
night I play my games, I go to sleep, I think of Ramses. The people in the streets, they give him treats, they give him candy. Will he ever lose? We'll never know, he'll never fight me. Ramses is the greatest, even though he runs with bandits. What am I saying? Ramses number one, he knows the secrets of desire. Ramses number one.